Thank you for tuning in to this Friday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. A report today on the relationship between tree nuts and microbes with Taylor Chalstrom. I'll also bring you national and regional agricultural news with a look at regional ag news right after this word from our sponsor.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
As the Californian, the signs of drought are evident, especially for those in the agricultural sector. With water supplies remaining a top issue, a coalition of agriculture and business organizations have written a letter to Governor Gavin Newsom and the California legislature asking them to establish a clear target to increase the state's surface water supply to meet growing needs. The letter states that the existing water system can no longer deliver the water necessary to sustain the world's fifth largest economy. The state has set goals for carbon emission reductions, renewable power, waste diversion, land conservation, and other climate-related objectives. However, there is not a goal to grow the water supply. In fact, the current strategy is precisely the opposite, to keep shrinking surface water supplies available for human consumption and expect homes and businesses to do more with less. As a result, the state is merely managing economic decline. The letter is requesting a clear goal to increase California's water supply in order to satisfy the current and future needs for human consumption and the growing economy. In a letter, the coalition cited recent reports from the University of California Merced, University of California Berkeley, and Yale University regarding the insufficiency of the current water supply to maintain agriculture and the food supply. The letter says that they are disappointed in the lack of urgency reflected in the state budget currently being considered, especially in a year when California has the resources available to make long-term investments in an area of demonstrated public need. The letter says that the national economy has recently witnessed supply shortages of raw materials, computer chips, and even baby formula. The lack of water will serve to amplify these impacts in unimaginable ways. The California Department of Food and Agriculture has made grant funding available for beet curlytop virus control. The beet curlytop virus control program may consider funding projects to develop new management methods for treating the beet leafhopper, the primary vector of beet curlytop virus, or to develop enhancements to other program areas to mitigate the virus. Funding will be based on the researcher using no pesticide alternative or Department of Pesticide Regulation approved pesticides registered for use in California on BLH and or on rangelands and hillsides. Businesses, individuals, nonprofits, public agency, and tribal governments are eligible to apply. For more information, call 916-206-2529. The 10th Annual Ventura Farm Day, set for Saturday, November 5th, is seeking sponsors. During Farm Day, more than 14 Ventura County farms and agricultural businesses open their doors and invite the public to learn how their food is grown. This year's theme is Meet All the Hands That Feed You. Since Farm Day began 10 years ago, 48,000 people have toured farms and ag-related companies throughout Ventura County, according to Mary Marinville, founder and CEO of Students for Eco-Education and Agriculture, the nonprofit that organizes Farm Day. It's an opportunity for the public to get a better understanding of the food growing process. Visitors come away appreciating the hard work that goes into producing the food they eat. It's a fun, unique learning experience for all ages. For more information, log on to VenturaCountyFarmDay.com/support. Supplies of bell peppers are transitioning growing regions in California. In a state, growing is moving from the southern region to Bakersfield in Central California. So supplies of green bell peppers are opening up, according to Garrett Powell of Peter Rabbit Farms in Coachella. He notes that overall there's less supply than last year at this time. It's just based on the inflationary cost environment. Everyone looked at their numbers and saw costs were increasing and maybe planted less. But there's still plenty of supply for green bell peppers coming up in the next 1.5 months out. In addition, Peter Rabbit Farms is also in the second year of marketing green peppers under the Blue Jay label. Cable out of Johnson Farms in Bakersfield. Along with California, Powell notes that Georgia also has strong production of green peppers currently. And in red bell peppers, there are hothouses in Mexico and Canada that are going, as well as Coachella field grown, he says, adding that Coachella will be slowing on red peppers and likely finish up by July 4th. The California Prune Board's executive committee has estimated 75,000 short tons in volume for the 2022 prune crop year. While it's still early, this estimation tracks with the average high-quality crop California is known for. The premium quality and range of optimum sizes of California prunes will have significant demand as global inventory remains constrained, adding upward pressure on the value of the fruit. The oversupply from just a few years ago has morphed into a very tight market due to erratic global supply and weather-related challenges over the past couple of years, according to Don Z, executive director for the California Prune Board. He says medium to large prunes will be the primary domain of California this year. As consumption of healthy, shelf-stable foods continues gaining traction, demand for California prunes in markets around the world remains strong. California prune growers and processors consistently produce premium fruit with a focus on sizing and flavor, delivering to 60 countries each year. Sunkist Growers is excited to showcase its organic citrus portfolio at the upcoming Organic Produce Summit, which is July 13th and 14th in Monterey, California. For more than 15 years, the California Citrus Cooperative has been a proud provider of USDA-certified organic citrus and continues to offer seasonal varieties throughout the year to meet ongoing demand. Sunkist offers consistent year-round supply of organic citrus alongside conventional counterparts. Lemons and Valencia oranges are currently in season and will be displayed at OPS, while the complete assortment also includes navel oranges, as well as organic specialties such as Caracara and blood oranges, star ruby grapefruit, California mandarins, and Mineola tangelos.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
West Coast growers are exceptional at producing a wide variety of nuts, including almonds, walnuts, and pistachios that are enjoyed across the globe. The next frontier for tree nut growers and their crop advisor partners is to promote new practices that encourage the long-term sustainability of farms for future generations. And two of those practices include improving soil health and soil quality. Researchers recognize a strong link between soil health and quality and crop performance in tree nuts, according to Dr. Carl Wyant.
A lot of folks think when they think of microbes and nut trees, there's a bit of a size mismatch. You know, big trees above ground. Now, how could they possibly have any sort of relationship between these tiny microscopic organisms, fungi and bacteria below ground? But there's been a lot of great research papers that have come out recently showing that these microbes are the key for success. And so I'll just reference this in terms of almonds just for simplicity, but this works for any of the permanent crops. So for the fungi, what we're thinking is fungi can form a partnership with these almond trees. It's called mycorrhizae. The fungi get paid in plant sugars from photosynthesis. And as a result, those mycorrhizal fungi are able to effectively expand the root volume of that plant to as they go out into the soil searching for nutrients, searching for water, and that can help that crop get access to additional resources. Hyphae also, the threads that fungi make also help tie soil particles together, and that can improve soil structure. And then there's also a relationship between fungi and not only the mycorrhizal fungi, but also the decomposing fungi that's called saporitic fungi. That fungi can help out with improving plants' tolerance to stressful events. If you want to go even smaller, we start talking about the bacteria. Very, very small. Bacteria are important for decomposing materials in the soil, organic matter that helps, or compost or manures that helps to release nutrients that the plants can take up. Bacteria also have some cool cellular machinery called enzymes that they can actually release and help free up, you know, phosphate that's locked away on those soil minerals. And same with potassium, and that can help make some nutrients more available. Bacteria, when you have enough of them, they start to secrete these little glues called EPS, and that EPS starts to stick your soil particles together, and that can improve soil structure. And then again, just like the fungi, you have some improvements in abiotic stress tolerance when you have a functional microbiome.
There are multiple practices that are able to be employed in tree nut orchards to make sure that both tree nuts and microbes are happy, including feeding the soil biology, cover cropping, reducing tillage, incorporating mulches and compost, and good irrigation management.
We spend so much of our time making sure the trees are happy. You know, let's carve out some of that time and that brain space to make sure your microbes are happy so they can do the work that you're asking them to do. And I just listed them off a number of reasons. So one piece where you can start is to feed the soil bacteria. Give those bacteria and fungi a meal. And there's a number of different food sources on the market that you can turn to get that done and to meet your logistics in terms of fertilizer blending or other ways to get the food source out. Some newer ways that have come into the permanent crop world are cover cropping. One important piece for the cover crops is that, you know, in the off season, when it's relatively cool out, you know, you can grow a cover crop, and those cover crops will release carbon materials to the microbiome and effectively will keep feeding them even in the off season. And that can help restore your fungi and bacteria. Reducing tillage is a good way to improve your microbiome counts. Just think if you're a bacteria or fungi and there was a disc ripping through your house every year, make it hard to make a living that way. So if you can reduce your tillage, that's a great way to do so. A couple more ways to get into to making sure your microbes are happy is to try and incorporate mulches and compost when you can. Just think of these as bulk food and nutrient sources, and that could be a way to bolster your microbiome. And the other ways that I mentioned, tillage, cover cropping, and soil foods, those are all great ways to make sure your microbiome is happy.
Tree nut crops have a clear connection to important soil health and soil quality metrics, including a robust and healthy soil microbiome, good soil structure, and the soil's ability to store moisture for crop use during periods of stress. And Dr. Wyant says the research backs this up.
There's a number of great research studies out there that have come out that showing that paying attention to your soil microbiome, making sure your fungi and bacteria are happy, making sure you're improving the soil health itself, just how alive is that soil, they can benefit permanent crop growers. And that's it's not a short-term fix. You can't put out your food source and then the next day you have, you know, a big jump in your yield. Really, it's about that commitment, making sure over the season those microbes are happy, well-fed. You can test for your microbial populations that are at the ag labs that are in your area, and they can measure how alive is your soils and help inform your management practices. And hopefully that given that seasonal sort of approach, you can start to see yield benefits.
More on microbes' relation to tree nut crops can be found in the April 2021 edition of West Coast Nut Magazine. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
Unsure of your navel orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard at hull split from navel orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed, broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
In national agricultural news, we get started with an updated look at food prices. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford has the full story.
During the height of the pandemic, food price inflation was mainly fueled by higher prices for meats, especially beef and pork, due to supply and demand disruptions. But
we can't say that now.
No, we can't. Agriculture Department economist Matt McLaughlin's comments after seeing the latest consumer price index. It says food shoppers at grocery stores saw food prices rise in May by 1.3%. That's a big percentage for 1 month, taking prices 12% above May a year ago, with just about every food, not just meat, every food costing more and in most cases a lot more. In fact, we could not find a single food item listed in the extensive lineup in the Consumer Price Index that did cost less than it did a year ago. No products that are even costing the same as last year. Now, Matt does say,
we do see some slower growing categories within fruits and vegetables and then our sugars and sweet categories. But all the other categories with the exceptions of eggs are somewhere between 10 and 20%.
10 to 20% higher than this time a year ago. So food price inflation, which was the result mainly of problems in the meat sector, is now expanding to almost every food. And so
we're having to take a more comprehensive perspective on what the drivers of food price inflation are.
Some of those drivers include continued high consumer demand.
And then input costs are just changing. It's no secret that energy prices are up this year significantly. Some of those price increases preceded the Ukrainian conflict, but certainly have been exacerbated by that event. And commodity prices, things like corn, wheat, and soy, are quite expensive right now, too.
Plus, we have bird flu, avian influenza, and it is reducing the poultry flocks across the country. And Matt says,
this is showing up in the retail egg sector. Most of the birds lost, the approximately 40 million, have been among laying hens. We've had about 2 million lost this month so far. So we are still not entirely sure what the trajectory of this outbreak is going to look like and how it's going to impact egg prices. But so far, we can see that it's already increased egg prices pretty substantially. It was a 10% increase last month, a 5% increase this month, bringing us to a year-over-year change of 32.2%.
That's for eggs. And prices of chicken are about 16.5% higher than a year ago and still rising. So all of this is helping push food price hikes to 40-year highs. This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Representatives from 37 U.S. agribusinesses and farm organizations will join Department of Agriculture Deputy Secretary Dr. Jewel Brona for an agribusiness trade mission to London June 22nd through the 24th. Participants will engage directly with foreign buyers, receive in-depth market briefs from the Foreign Agricultural Service and industry trade experts, and participate in site visits. Dr. Brona says she is very excited to lead a delegation to the United Kingdom, one of their top trading partners, adding that the United Kingdom presents strong marketing opportunities for many U.S. consumer-oriented products. U.S. agricultural exports to the United Kingdom totaled $1.9 billion in 2021. In late May, 40 agriculture and food groups called on the administration to eliminate or reduce tariffs being imposed on other countries. The ag groups say those countries are in turn levying tariffs against American products, which are hurting the U.S. farming industry. One of the groups that signed the request to U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai was U.S. Apple. President and CEO Jim Baer says while the aluminum and steel tariffs have led to greater costs for implements and other pieces of equipment, the greater cost comes when it's time to send the product to countries like India. He says now is the time to get out of the current situation.
President Biden campaigned on the idea of getting out of these damaging tariffs. It hasn't happened, and so that's why we were happy to join with those other ag organizations from dairy and wheat and oilseeds and pork and rice and others to say, hey, it's time to draw this to an end. We've been shouldering this pain for so long. Let's get out of it and get U.S. growers back to doing what they do best, which is export a great product.
Baer noted it's not just India, which has become a challenging market. China has also put down several tariffs, hurting the apple industry. He says they have yet to hear back from the USTR, and growers are anxious.
We normally export one-third of the crop. And that's about $1 billion a year toward a positive balance of trade, and that's really taken a hit. So we'd like to get back into that, and the president has the ability to make that happen.
Once again, U.S. Apple President and CEO Jim Baer. Sun damage on farmers' skin is certainly a big issue in the summer months, but it's not the only threat from the elements. Heat stress and heat stroke can put a farmer in harm's way and take them away from work that needs to get done. Melissa Pleckelman, outreach specialist with the National Farm Medicine Center, offers these tips.
Great point. We know that with sun comes heat, right? And we talk a lot about heat stress, heat illness. And so it's very important that farmers are constantly drinking water. We see a lot of farmers go out, they take a couple cans of soda with them, they take a big jug of coffee. The truth is that they need to make sure that they're replenishing their bodies with water in order to keep themselves hydrated and prevent that skin or that heat illness or heat stroke. It's crazy, but a farmer should actually drink 8 ounces of water, I'm sorry, eight-ounce cups of water every hour. Now, a lot of farmers will say, if I drink that much water, I would have to go to the bathroom all day long. I wouldn't get anything done. The truth is, if you just continuously take small drinks of water throughout the day, then that will actually keep you more hydrated than drinking a whole bunch at the beginning of the hour and then having to go to the bathroom the whole time and then drinking a whole bunch again. Continuously drink small amounts throughout the day to keep your body at peak efficiency. Not only is it going to make you feel better and it's going to prevent you from getting heat stroke, but also your mind, actually you get a brain fog when you start to get dehydrated. So make sure that, you know, to keep your mind in, at peak efficiency as well, as you're trying to get your chores done, you're trying to get the farming done, just make sure that you drink enough water. And again, remember, if it's hot out and you're starting to feel kind of off, seek shade. Find some place that you can take a break, take a breather, get some shade, cool yourself down. Again, you know, farmers push it all the time. We know that they do. It's their culture, and we appreciate that from them because, again, it gives us our food, fiber, and fuel. But when they push it too hard, sometimes they have to take time off of the job because of things like heat illness and heat stroke.
Melissa Pleckelman with the National Farm Medicine Center.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
With the drought affecting growers around California, many are looking to reduce water use. Freeze-damaged almond trees, which may have reduced yields this year, may be seen as a place to cut back, but research indicates that reducing irrigation to almond orchards leads to long-term reductions in its productivity. Kurt Pierce is a UC Cooperative Extension Irrigation and Water Resources Advisor.
As soon as the extent of the damage from the past winter's late freeze events became, you know, clear, myself and other the area advisors, you know, we began hearing from producers that were wondering, you know, how much, if any, water they could hold back. You know, and these folks, they had crop losses that range from, you know, mild to severe to total crop loss. But, you know, it doesn't really matter how much of the crop is lost. Unfortunately, the reality is, from an irrigation management standpoint anyway, that, you know, the water needs of the fruits are actually relatively minor compared, you know, to those of the tree overall. And, you know, researchers at UC have studied peach, you know, which of course is a close relative of almond. And, you know, they found that even a total absence of a crop has reduced the overall water requirements by only about 10%, you know, which is typically outside the level of precision that we see in the vast majority of even, you know, well-managed irrigation programs. You know, to maintain that tree health and vigor that we want for optimum production capability, then we really need to try and keep those irrigation levels up very close to where you would be in a typical year.
Even in the case of total crop loss, there could be long-term damage brought about by under-irrigating.
You know, the goal then is to think about the next year's crop, you know, since we want to support continued tree growth and bud development for the following year. You know, and so producers will want to irrigate to provide that support. You know, early in the season in a normal or in a production year, you know, reductions in applied water, you know, they would likely result in a reduction of pollen and shell sizes. And so in the absence of a crop, you know, those, of course, are no longer a concern. But what could still be impacted is that shoot and spur growth that provides the fruiting positions for the coming crops. And so even without a current or with a smaller current crop, irrigations early in the season are still going to be important. You know, now significant water stress in the summer months between approximately mid-May and going into harvest. Now that'll usually lead to nuts which are smaller or lighter, or which have more shrivel. At hull split, you know, typically sometimes in July, the recommendations have been that some mild water stress can be beneficial, you know, both for aiding in the hull split and to reduce instances of hull rot. However, you know, regardless of crop load, it's very important to avoid significant water stress during bud development, you know, which typically begins around that same time as hull split in July. trees with higher levels of water stress during this time, they'll have overall reduced bud initiation rates that'll lead to a reduced crop load in the following season.
There are a number of ways to optimize water usage in almond orchards.
First is absolutely to have a good system management plan, you know, to ensure that an irrigation system is providing the amounts of water that you want and providing that water to the places that you want it. You know, so this means checking a system, you know, from pump to the plants. You know, is the pump operating to specification, the appropriate filters in place, and are those functioning properly? You know, is the pressure sufficient to correct and distribute that water? You know, what's the distribution uniformity? That's really important. You know, what can be addressed to improve that? You know, each of those questions, you know, should be asked and answered regularly to have a solid basis from which to approach your scheduling. You know, next is to have a good handle on the true water needs of the trees. Many producers, you know, they may be providing more water to the trees than they really may need or be able to use. So using a tree-based measurement, you know, such as those that you can obtain with a pressure chamber device, you know, is perhaps the best method for accurately assessing when the trees need water. Producers may have considered them before, you know, but decided not to use them out of concern, you know, for the cost or the amount of time that they thought that using one might take. You know, but even limited use can help realize benefits that directly, you know, positively impact the bottom lines, you know, provided that the trees that they select for the measurements are representative of the various areas of their orchards. You know, they can quickly pay for themselves when used correctly. The way by which irrigations are delivered is another area where changes might be considered. You know, knowing that the soils might be highly variable throughout an orchard, but that the bulk of the tree's uptake roots, they lie in those top 18 inches or so. You know, that means that shorter or more frequent sets might be a good way to maximize the benefit of the water that's being delivered to those trees, you know, without as much concern for the soil variability. You know, best management practices would be to use a pressure chamber to target preferable stress levels to the respective growth or development stage of the crop. You know, for almond, moderate stress levels, they would be about -8 to -12 bars, you know, going through about mid-June, maybe -14 to -18 bars from mid-June, you know, through about 90% hull split, and about -10 to -14 bars for the rest of the season, you know, from 90% hull split to leaf drop. You know, in extreme situations where the goal is just to keep the trees alive, you know, then -14 bars through mid-June and -25 bars after that would be your targets. But, you know, in that situation, it's going to take a couple of years of full irrigation to get production levels back to where you might expect them to be. We've done research, Ken Shackle has done research at UC Davis that found that, you know, to stay alive, you know, an almond tree really only needs about 7 to 8 inches of water a year, but we don't want to go that low.
For My Ag Life Daily News, I'm Patrick Cotter.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.